Under the Heritage Act, traditional owners can't appeal, but miners can. And the issue around whether that, you know, whether there's, you know, an element of the Racial Discrimination Act there that might be appropriate. I know that I want to look into that area as well. They need to totally redo our Heritage Act, and they need to make sure that the uniqueness, the value of First Nations culture and heritage is at front and centre and the core of that legislation. And it's about protecting that and enabling First Nations peoples to make the decisions. Because the point's, you know, been also strongly made to me is that First Nations peoples, they may decide in some areas that they're okay about mining going ahead. But the point there is free, prior, informed consent, which is part of, a core part of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the Global Declaration, and that's what needs to be at the heart of that, that First Nations peoples get to make those decisions free of any pressure, any gag clauses, and fully informed.
Welcome to Wonder Story, this 17th day of June 2020. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Over the last few weeks, Western Australians have come to understand a little bit better how legislation that is supposed to protect Aboriginal heritage works in this state, at least when mining is involved. First, it was Rio Tinto, and their Chief Executive Officer, Chris Salisbury, apologising for the distress caused the traditional owners of Juukan Gorge in Western Australia, destroying two rock shelters, one of which was 46,000 years old. There was global outrage. But was it an apology? A leaked tape of a Rio Tinto staff meeting last Wednesday revealed that Rio Tinto might only have apologised for the distress, not for the event itself. Rio Tinto's CEO told his staff that the company had the backing of political leaders of both sides, saying that there is still support for us out there. Following this report in the Financial Review, CEO Chris Salisbury tried to smooth over the matter when on Monday he said that Rio Tinto apologises for what happened at Juukan Gorge. The Puutu Kunti Kurama and Pinikura peoples, known as PKKP, are the local land custodians. Their efforts to go to speak to the minister failed, for as Western Australians have come to learn, once an approval is given by the government, that's it. And so the minister has called for a review of the State Aboriginal Heritage Act. Understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan is speaking with Western Australian Greens Senator Rachel Sewart.
You would have heard that Rio Tinto blew up a couple of rock shelters in Juukan Gorge. What was your personal reaction when you heard that?
Shock. Heartbroken when I consider the impact this has for the PKKP. The astonishment that Rio would think they could blow up this, and they knew how important it was. They can't pretend they didn't. An area that was so significant to the traditional owners, but also of world significance, 46,000 years old, a plait of human hair that can be traced back to current traditional owners just for over 4,000 years. Just astonishing that they think it's okay to do that in 2020.
Well, they did apologise, or at least the CEO apologised for the distress it caused. Did you feel that was enough?
No, I don't. In fact, the Greens have called for his resignation. It was appropriate for us to call for his resignation, given the mishandling of this process, the fact that they tried to imply Rio didn't know the area's value when they participated in helping make a documentary on the area. It just doesn't add up.
But there was more. Fortescue Metals Group is working in the Pilbara too. That company will make $280 billion over the life of the three mining leases in Solomon Hub. Last week, Western Australians learned that FMG had plans to destroy two more rock shelters, 47,800 years old and 60,000 years old. And a third rock shelter, with animal and human figures, animal tracks and geometric designs, narratives of the dreaming. The Eastern Guruma people have been making submissions to the government to try and save their heritage since early this year. Who'd know that we had such globally valuable heritage sites? And now BHP. At least on Thursday, BHP promised not to destroy 40 Aboriginal heritage sites, which it can demolish if it chooses, at least not without further extensive consultation with the Banjarmaa traditional owners.
And then, of course, we've now heard BHP, and they've put their process on hold, and FMG, who, by the way, fought traditional owners over the Solomon mine, lost their appeal, and now in other areas also has plans, well, I'm repeating what's been reported, to destroy other caves that are of very high significance.
Well, they're talking about 60,000-year-old Pilbara Heritage Site at Queen Mine.
Yeah.
And they've already got permission to do that, so they can just go ahead and do that legally at any moment.
Yeah, and that takes us, of course, cycles us back to the Heritage Act, where mining companies can appeal, but traditional owners can't. It's ludicrous with an act that I maintain has been shaped by the mining industry, has lobbied very heavily, the same as they've lobbied very heavily to undermine the EPA Act or the Environmental Protection Act. That over the years they've lobbied very hard to do that. And I've cut my teeth campaigning for the Conservation Council trying to stop mining companies getting into national parks because they've always wanted to mine in national parks. And who can forget, you know, the mining in Karajini? The industry has a history in Western Australia of heavily lobbying, of influencing legislation for outcomes that gives them access to important environmental, heritage and cultural areas.
Senator Rachel Seward, is this the same Aboriginal Heritage Act that had its definitions changed under the Barnett government so that significant sites were no longer significant if there wasn't, you know, weekly practice of ceremony?
Yes, this is the same. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's been on my mind as we have been debating this over the last, well, ever since Rio blew up the caves. It's been on my mind that this is an act that you're exactly right, made those sorts of changes. So again, my argument is heavily influenced by developers.
Where do we need to go with environmental laws? You've been campaigning ever since you were with the Conservation Council. There have been all sorts of promises made locally in Perth, Bush Forever, promises made about new relationships with Aboriginal people. And yet here we are where 40 Aboriginal heritage sites could be blown up by BHP, a 60,000-year-old heritage site could be blown up by FMG, and we get the odd apology. But are environmental laws the way to do what we need to do? Do we need a new relationship between Aboriginal people and our land?
Yes, we definitely do. And that's, you know, I take a lot of heart from what's been going on recently in terms of the strong support and outrage by community in terms of what's been happening. Now, I'd argue very strongly, and I am arguing very strongly, that the mining industry does not have a social license to do this. They do not have a social license to blow up Aboriginal heritage. They actually need to be handing back these approvals because, of course, the government can't rescind these approvals, another delightful little element of the Act, or the Heritage Act. They need to hand back these approvals. They need to go, yeah, okay, we've been doing this too long. We recognise that this is not acceptable and they need to be going to government. Government, of course, needs to be showing leadership, calling him in and also and reading him the Riot Act, basically, that this isn't acceptable and that they are going to be taking urgent action to improve the heritage laws. They also need to be taking a new look at the EPA Act as well. To make sure that our laws are actually up to speed with what people expect from their government.
So I'm hearing two things there, Rachel. One is that we need better laws. But can you explain for people who don't understand, or maybe mining companies who don't understand, what social license is, where it comes from?
So I would argue very strongly they do not have the support from the community to do what they are doing. So they don't have that social license. You know, like people also talk about, you know, social responsibilities. And of course, that's one of the areas when we talk about lobbying companies, that social responsibility is not actually written into the legislation, needs to be. But I also think I should probably touch on the National EPBC Act, the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act, again, shaped and influenced by developers and mining. And of course, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Heritage Protection Act, the National Act, which is so weak. It's ridiculous. And over the years, there's been attempts to improve it, but they have languished. The last person, I think, was Peter Garrett, who made an attempt to, and it hasn't been touched by a government since then. Those changes went through. So there's a lot of legislative repair to do, but in the meantime, companies need to be taking the lead. And just today in the media in the east, I'm in Canberra for those listening at the moment, for those in the east, you know, there's a mine in New South Wales that will lead to, if it goes ahead, to the destruction of irreplaceable Aboriginal heritage as well. So it's not just in our home state of Western Australia, it's elsewhere across the country as well.
Rachel Seward, we're talking about social licence and mining companies. When the ASX Corporate Governance Council revised its corporate governance principles, the fourth edition is out this year, they excluded and they debated, but then they excluded the idea of social responsibility or corporate social responsibility from the basic corporate governance principles of any publicly listed companies. Is that good enough?
No, it's not, and it's out of touch with what the community is expecting. And, you know, this issue came up also, it's come up many times, but, you know, when we were campaigning against James Price Point and the development there, again, we made the very strong point. And, you know, Geoffrey Cousins, for example, was making a very strong point at the time, because he was obviously with ACF at the time, made the strong point that social responsibility is essential. And that's why you get years ago when we were campaigning on forests and, people are still doing it, you know, buying shares to make companies take their social responsibility seriously. So I think, you know, that shows how far behind the times, you know, companies really are if they aren't paying attention to those issues of social responsibility and their social license.
What sort of relationship have you got personally as a Greens senator for Western Australia with mining companies? We know that they do have meetings with departments when they need them and with ministers, but how do they relate to your good self?
Occasionally, if they want us to look at a mine that they're doing and show us how responsible they are, but they book a meeting and come in. So I think it's fair to say that I've met with them very few times. I meet with them when they ask to, but it's obviously we do not have the same relationship with mining entities as the government, for example. You do see very heavy presence around this in Canberra, in Parliament House. You do see a very heavy presence. And, you know, let's not forget the power they wielded when they got rid of, they knocked off mining royalties and mining tax, et cetera, so the community got a better share of the wealth of this land. So I'll give people the time of day, let's put it that way, to hear their proposals. And, you know, I've we're very clear we're not against all mining, but it has to be, in an environmentally sustainable manner in areas where you're not trashing the countryside. They need to be rehabilitating, you know, all those sorts of things. Blowing up, irreplaceable First Nations heritage and culture is unacceptable.
Does this lead us to connect with questions of corporate donations as well?
Oh, very strongly so. Yeah, very strongly so. And, of course, the Greens are put out there, do not take corporate donations, but very strongly so. And you see, you know, all these fundraisers where, you know, corporates are rubbing shoulders and, or maybe not quite so closely in this day and age right now, but in the past, having access, they pay a lot of money to get access to ministers of government. And so they're there influencing on a day-to-day basis really. And I suppose I'll flip your question on its head that you asked me before. One of the roles I've always taken very seriously about being a senator in this place is being a voice for community and making sure community organisations get access to this place. Because I tell you what, big business, mining companies, corporations are walking the corridors of power every day. Maybe in COVID, not quite so much, but when we're operating in a normal environment, they're here every day lobbying, seeking meetings, in and out of people's offices. And so it happens as a normal part of, what goes on in Parliament House. For what counts as normal, it's part of a normal day.
Senator Seward, I know that you're active in other portfolios like the robo-debt and so on. We won't cover those today. But one of your jobs has been on the expert panel of constitutional recognition of Indigenous Australians. How does what's happening in the Pilbara inform you about what we need to do as a nation to have closer relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous?
One of the key things, and it came out of the Uluru process as well, is the issue around truth-telling and healing. That in order to, you know, reconcile as a nation, by the way, I think we've got a long way to go to do that, but we have to tell the truth about colonisation of this land. We have to tell the truth about dispossession, oppression, the massacres that occurred, the stolen generations that occurred. That truth-telling has to happen if we are to heal and to ensure that First Nations peoples get justice. And so that's where I see, you know, the issue, and we've been having this debate about, you know, the colonizers and the people that are revered as developing this country. What people don't talk about is the bad history, the massacres that occurred. And we've got to be telling that truth. It's that you can't heal without telling that truth. And I think sometimes we take two steps forward, one step back when we're blowing up stuff like in the Pilbara that is still enabled and facilitated to happen. We've got to deal with that if we are going to close the gap and if we are to truly reconcile as a nation.
For employees of these mining companies who are becoming aware of these kinds of desecrations or perhaps overlooking species that might be rare or endangered, so on, is there sufficient whistleblower protection for people in these mining companies to be able to get the word through to politicians or to the media?
You know, it's very obvious we need to improve our whistleblower legislation overall. We've got to fix it so people don't even have to do that. We have to fix the laws so that we don't have to rely on people having to risk their jobs to come and tell people what is going on in order to stop things in time. All the approvals that have been granted, companies should, going back to where we started, companies should hand them back, and then they need to be doing proper reviews of where they want to mine. Up front, they need to lift all of the gag clauses in contracts on First Nations peoples. It's just simply inappropriate for them to do that. Unfair, inappropriate. So they need to lift all of those gag clauses as well.
So now Western Australians know. We have the three mining companies, that's Rio Tinto, FNG and BHP, all lined up in the Pilbara with their ministerial consent orders. There has been state Aboriginal heritage legislation that has all the right words in it, but very little meaning when it comes to Aboriginal heritage itself. It needs revising. But what will those revisions look like? Where will the science and the global heritage values come in? What interests will Aboriginal people be allowed? And will our national government ever act to protect the interests of Aboriginal people under the Constitution? You've been listening to Senator Rachel Seward, Greens member in the Senate, speaking to Understory reporter Adrian Glamorgan. I'm Elizabeth Poe. You can catch this story online, including as a podcast, in all the usual places. Listen next week, when there'll be more to explore with Understory, Radio for the Planet.